Shall we begin?
Why not? Welcome to Frankie Sense and More. It's like she's got a whole lot of goodness for you with a little bit of sass.
Frankie, did you just say...
She sure did. Not to mention, along with...
Whoops.
Join us now as Frankie Picasso and her new co-host mix it up with authors, musicians, and interviews with world-changing people.
Let's begin.
Okay, let's begin now, because it only makes sense.
Hello there, and welcome to March, Frankie Sense and More. I'm Frankie Picasso, your host, and I'm here with my colleague and friend, Mr. Brent Marchand.
Hey there, how are you?
I think we're all doing great. It's a nice sunny day. It looks like spring is going to sprung.
That works for me.
Is that right? I think so. Sounds good. Sounds pretty good to me too. I like it. All right.
Well, that's perfect. It's perfect weather to come to what is essentially the high holidays of the movie season this weekend. So we've got some good stuff to talk about, a few new movies, and then we'll go to the Oscars.
Cool.
So we're going to start off actually with an Oscar nominee, The Eternal Memory, which is in the up for the Best Documentary Feature. This is an interesting fusion of two different genres. It's a documentary and a love story. It's something you don't really see very often, although this is actually the second one we've seen in recent months. We also saw this mixed with the movie American Symphony not too long ago. Mm-hmm. But this film tells the story of renowned Chilean journalist Augusto Gangora and his relationship with his wife, actress Paula Urrutia. Gangora established a reputation for himself during the years of the Augusto Pinochet regime in Chile, reporting on a lot of the nasty things that were going on at a time when there was a lot of press censorship also. And when the regime was thrown out in 1990, he became very influential as an author, helping to reestablish Chile's artistic and cultural heritage. And his wife also eventually became the country's minister of culture and the arts. So they were really a very high profile power couple, but more than that, they were very much in love. I mean, that's just plainly obvious from every scene you see in this movie. The unfortunate part is that when he turned 62, he was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And it then became, his wife's almost full-time job, just taking care of him as he went through this decline. Now, the thing that's interesting is that in this story, a lot of times when people develop a condition like that, they want to go into isolation and not make themselves very public. Having been a journalist and an author and a high-profile person in Chilean society, Gangora said, no, I want people to see our story, particularly in terms of, letting people know what it's like living with this, what it's like caring for someone with this.
So hard.
The impact on a couple, that's been together for a number of years. And also, to help just generally to raise awareness about the condition itself. So that eventually led to the making of this documentary, which is filmed over a number of years, showing their lives together and everything that Paulina does to preserve as much of his memory for as long as possible. And they go through a number of exercises that they do. And, she's very diligent in terms of making sure that they work at this, that this is not something that they just let slide away.
It's a real exercise in love.
Yeah. I mean, and also, not just for them, but also for
the everybody. Public, like a book on this is how you love somebody.
Exactly. And, what you end up seeing here is a story that is really been compared to many of the great screen romances over the years, but told in a documentary format, which is kind of an interesting way of doing it.
Yeah.
This is the kind of movie that will simultaneously warm your heart and break your heart as you watch his story unfold. It's really quite moving. Made a very, very good choice as a nominee for documentary feature. It is available for streaming right now. In fact, that's pretty much where it's been available for most of the time it's been out. I'm really glad that it got this nomination because I think it will do a lot to help raise the profile of the picture. This is, I think, definitely, excuse me, the kind of movie that people should see. Not just, for those who are actually going through a situation like this, but for those who may be faced with it someday. You know, it provides a helpful guide, I guess you would say, in terms of learning how to deal with circumstances like this and showing how it's possible to keep the love in the relationship, even in the face of this kind of, debilitating disease. I like this movie a lot.
I can tell. You know, it's interesting. It's March, not February, but all of our movies have to do with love. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is. And
There's different aspects of it, but
and I'm glad to see this as a trend in the documentary genre because, you've had a lot of entertainment movies and you've had a lot of war movies and, investigative journalism and so forth. But personal profiles in terms of romance is something that you haven't really seen much of
I was
in this
kind of thinking of
genre.
I don't want to call him Michael Keaton because it's not Michael Keaton. What's his name? The young I was gonna say the young guy from, he's not young anymore, he's our age. Oh my God, Frankie, come on. Big TV star, Back to the Future. We just did a
Oh, Michael
documentary.
J. Fox.
J. Fox, yeah. Kind of his documentary on his condition
Yes.
and all of that very reminds me of that in a way.
Yeah.
It's just kind of a documentary. It's hard. It's hard to show your life and it's hard to show yourself not 100%.
And to be that vulnerable, in terms of, making the picture very plainly known to the public. I mean, this is somebody who was, Gongora was somebody who was seen very much as a hero during the Pinochet regime. And he stood up to authorities at a time when it was difficult, and he was a driving force in helping to make sure the word got out about what was going on in the country. And to see someone go from that kind of almost heroic status to a condition where you see him become increasingly frail and forgetful, and there are times, with a lot of Alzheimer's patients when their frustration gets the better of them and they start acting out. And you even see that here to a certain extent, even with, being in the company of his loving wife. You
Hard. It's
do.
really hard on the caregiver. People forget about the caregiver a lot, you know, but that role is a significant role. And it's for the rest of her life or their lives together. It's not like she can just walk away. I mean, she could if she was not a nice person, but I've only known one other woman that really cared enough. Like, you know, her husband had a really bad stroke and to change a diaper on him because
Yeah.
in the beginning, before he was getting everything back, you know, she had to do that. And I don't know very many people that would do that.
Exactly. And she definitely, stood by his side through all of this, as difficult as it was. And I mean, this is someone who had, her own very vibrant career as an actress. Even, she even in the early part of early stages of his illness, she tried to keep that going as much as she could. She would bring him to rehearsals and so forth so that he could watch and even sometimes participate in the rehearsals a little bit. But it's something where you reach a point of where it becomes so all-consuming that you even have to set your own needs and desires aside to care for someone like this. And it takes a lot. It takes a lot of courage. It takes a lot of stamina. And this movie brings all of that to the fore.
Beautiful.
So I like this one a lot. I'm going to give this one 4 out of 5. And I wish it the best of luck on Oscar night.
All right.
So
Totally.
keeping in the vein of caregiving, our next film is a new independent release from Mexico called Totem, which tells the story of how a 9-year-old girl is reacting to the impending decline of her dad. He's a young man. He's a gifted painter, but he's developed a very debilitating form of cancer. And he doesn't want her to see him the way he's declined. So she's not in his life very much, and she thinks it's her fault. You know, she
Yeah,
thinks
so
that
sad.
it's she's done something or that he doesn't like her. But he tries to convince her that no, that's not the case. It's just, you know, this is the way his life has been going.
Nothing like a little girl and their daddy.
No, exactly. You know, and this is all told through the story of a day in the life of those two and their family as they're preparing a birthday celebration for the young man, which he's reluctant to want to attend because he doesn't want everybody to see how he's declined either. Yet the thing is, the family's very concerned to make sure this event comes off because this may be the last one. And they want it to be a celebration of his life. And they want him to know how much everybody around him cares about him. So it's in many ways a story that's kind of, you know, sort of mundane where you see the whole family getting together to do the preparations for a birthday party. But when you consider the underlying intent for the party itself,
Yeah.
it really has a tremendous impact. And the other thing I liked a lot about this movie is that it's potentially a real downer, tearjerker, and so forth, given the circumstances for
Yeah.
both people. But the film very cleverly has integrated a lot, and I do mean a lot, of comic relief into this picture. So you see, you know, the characters having their own little chuckles over things. But I think it's really more for the audience than anything else, and the fact that it takes a lot of the pressure off of the viewer to give them some breathing room to be able to enjoy this story that ordinarily they might not be able to, given the nature of the subject matter.
Yeah, it's very,
So
it's so funny, eh, how our subconscious just reacts. You don't know these people, but we cry for them. It's crazy how that works. But when you think about having a celebration of life, I mean, it's beautiful to have a celebration of life with somebody while they're alive and hear you, see you, appreciate all your gestures, you know, rather than you're dead and it goes by you. We don't know if you're there or not. Yeah.
Well, and it also provides an opportunity to make amends too, to like, you know, let his daughter know that, okay, yes, maybe I'm going, but I'm not leaving you because you did something wrong or I don't like you. I love you dearly. I just was, you know, embarrassed about how I had declined. And I
Right.
didn't want you to see me that way. I
Yeah.
didn't want you to remember me that way, even though she's insistent upon seeing him because she knows there may not be that many more opportunities for
Yeah.
him to see her, you know. But one of the things, like, is I really can't stress enough about this movie is how effective the humor is. There's one scene where one of the dying man's sisters hires a shamanic practitioner woman to come in and smudge the house. And it's hilarious, and just in terms of the way they carry it out. I mean, you know, in the midst of all of this, you know, potentially downer chaos, you've got this wildly nutty scene going on,
That's hilarious.
and it's really good. I really enjoyed this picture a lot. It received a few awards season nominations. I wish it had gotten more. It also only played in theaters briefly. I believe it's
I
going to
couldn't even
become.
find it, tell you the truth.
It's going to be coming into streaming, I think, pretty soon because, I mean, having the virtue of the awards nominations behind it, that'll help to boost its chances. So when it does become available, I really encourage people to see this because I think they'll find that it's an uplifting, and yet bittersweet kind of picture.
Yeah.
That again, you know, like the Eternal Memory, it provides people with, you know, kind of a guide in terms of how to deal with situations like this, how to conduct yourself, how to work your way through it, how to say the things you want to say while you have the chance, that
Yeah.
kind of thing, you
Yep.
know. It moves along actually at a pretty good pace for a movie that deals with sort of everyday matters in many ways. It's a relatively short movie. It's, I think, about an hour and a half. But the thing is, I mean, it's a very intense hour and a half. And you'll definitely come out of it having, I think, very mixed feelings about it, but you'll be glad that you saw it. When I went to see it, I went with my partner. He was not crazy about the idea of wanting to see this. He came out of it elated. He just said, "I'm really glad that you brought me to see this because this is the kind of picture that we all need to see, particularly, as the years start to add up." Even though in this case you're dealing with two comparatively young people who are going through the kinds of things that you would hope that nobody that young should have to deal with.
It's funny though. Every time I saw my dad, it could be the last one. It was like that lasted for 20 years. Oh, we gotta go. It could be the last time we see him. The
So
cat
this
on
is another one that I liked a lot, and I'll give it 4 out of 5.
it. Beautiful.
It might take you a little while before it's available where you're at, but when it does become available, go see it. I think you'll really enjoy it.
All right. Beautiful.
Okay, so next we have a new film that just came to Netflix starting last week. This is a very much anticipated film, a sci-fi movie called Spaceman, featuring, of all people, Adam Sandler. When I first heard that, it seemed to me a case of miscasting, but
Oh, it's
he's
gonna be
actually,
space balls instead of
yeah, I
Spaceman.
mean, but this is actually, it's a fairly serious film. Tells the story of an astronaut who's on a solo deep space mission. But the thing is, he's distracted while he's there because he's having some difficulties with his wife back on Earth and being so far away. I mean, how can you realistically work things out, when you're 5 planets away? I mean, that kind of thing.
And he wasn't even really he wasn't really aware he was kind of having problems with his wife.
Exactly. Yeah, he was so focused on this mission that he
He
sort
was
of
unaware.
allowed himself to become unaware of, what was going on in his relationship. So he ends up encountering an ancient space alien who looks like a giant spider. And the two of them have sort of like their own form of therapy sessions to help him work through this. And it's an interesting evolution to see the way the nature of their dialogue evolves and how this perfectly, previously unknown character helps him come to realize things about himself and how to essentially, reboot them and get them back on track. Now, it's interesting in the fact that the movie has a lot of allusions to other sci-fi films. I mean, you see references in here to Interstellar, to Solaris, to Everything Everywhere All at Once.
I
And
love
this,
this movie. I loved
yeah,
it. A lot of people don't like it. I loved
and
it.
there were even a number of little passing references to the lyrics of David Bowie's Space Oddity, which I found really a very curious way of taking something lyrical and making it visual.
Like
And,
people are expecting Adam Sandler to be funny Adam Sandler. It's not funny Adam Sandler. And
No,
he's done several
no.
serious films, and he's always really good in them too. He's a very emotionally aware person. I
Well,
think.
he's been working very hard in recent years to try and make the transition from doing the kind of silly comedies he was best known for into more serious fare. And in the previous films he's done, I don't think he's quite picked the right parts to do it. But this time, he seems to step into this role more effectively than in some of the other movies. And I think he did a lot to help kind of turn the corner in terms of reinventing himself as an actor. It's obvious too, the fact that, you had some fairly heavy hitter co-stars who were willing to work with him, like Paul Dano and Carey Mulligan and Lena Olin and Isabella Rossellini.
And his daughter made a little brief appearance there too, I noticed.
Yes.
But
Now, but the one thing that did puzzle me a little bit about this movie is that there were times when there were some changes in tone that I found a little odd, where it seemed to be trying to be serious, but at the same time also kind of trying to be sort of cheeky and campy in a very low-key kind of way. And it made me kind of wonder, well, what exactly kind of mood is the director going for here? So that was one of the things that's puzzled me. It puzzled a lot of critics in some in
Which
other
scene
movies.
would that?
Well, for example, there were those scenes in the movie where you show Adam Sandler having to engage in commercials,
Oh, right, that part.
sponsors,
Yeah.
and that, I mean, they completely changed the tone. I mean,
Yeah.
you
Yeah.
know,
And I think that was part of, if I was, for the way I looked at that was what his payment for being able to go on this
yeah.
mission. He had to do this other crap that a lot of people have to do, right? So that his dream, what he thought was his dream, could job or whatever could happen. So you have to placate, the powers that be,
And
even
yet when you see a lot of these, you know, TV commercials and so forth that he does, they're kind of really very drastically different in mood from
Yeah,
the
I mean,
main
even that
rest of
one
the
he did where
story.
you, yeah, if you want to do this, you just do it like that, blah, blah, blah. Like, he did no emotion in it at all. Like, it was just like, okay, I have to say this, so I'll just say it. That was kind of interesting.
And then there was also the
Really loved it.
spider, you know, and I mean,
Yeah.
I appreciated the dialogue and the conversation between the
Beautiful.
two of them, but
Beautiful dialogue.
the special effects of the spider were really, I mean, they looked like something off of Mystery Science Theater at times.
I
And
think maybe that was,
again, that
and
kind of
some of
made me wonder.
the ship looked really old too, right? So I think maybe that was part of the allure is well, the other thing was he started writing this in college. He wrote this in college and then he picked it up and started to rewrite it like last year kind of thing, right? So I think maybe when back in college, how many, 40 years ago, it
Yeah.
would have been like that. So
Yeah.
maybe in his mind, I'm doing my young version in today's movie, maybe. I don't know. We don't know what's in his head, but I thought it was cool. I liked it. I liked how he became self-actualized in a way, in
Yes.
terms of love and in terms of relationships. And he was alone for 6 months and it didn't bother him until he met, the alien. And then all of a sudden he didn't want to be alone. And the alien was showing them things that he didn't want to see. But then, like most men, sat with him for a little while and went, oh, you might be right.
Well, the other thing that was interesting too is that when they reach the destination of the space anomaly that he's up there to investigate, it they find that it's like a portal to essentially accessing the infinite range of possibilities
Right.
for being able to carry things out. And that particularly intrigues me as someone who's a student of conscious creation, because, you know, that theory maintains that your beliefs, you know, they chart your reality, and that you have an infinite number of options open to you at any time. The same kind of message that was conveyed in Everything Everywhere All at Once. So, you know, it's a movie that makes you think in some ways. The only thing that I was a little bit really troubled by was, you know, the kind of variation in tone in terms of the way it got you to that ultimate conclusion. So I'm going to give this one kind of a conditional recommendation. I would give it 3 out of 5.
I like it. I would suspend your, obviously there's not a big spider out in space, so
Yeah.
suspend
How do we know?
that. We don't know. But I think the other important part of that movie, I don't know. I loved it. Like I just fell in love with it. And like my son had said to me, oh, you should see that movie. Like, it's kind of slow. It's a slow burner, but it's okay in the end, kind of thing. When he tried to trap the particle,
Yeah.
I'm thinking, isn't that just like a human?
Oh yeah.
To put something in a jar and try to take it back home, whether it dies or not in the jar, we don't know, but the thing couldn't be contained anyway. So, but that was just such a human response to something.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, it was
Yes.
that got me. I'm like, oh my God, you're doing it. You just want to trap
It's
it.
interesting to see how the reactions have been in among critics about this one. It's very it's been a very divisive film with critics. I mean, a lot of them maybe either really loved it or really hated it.
Yeah.
And
I really liked it.
then there's some of us kind of in the middle who were sort of like, well, I like certain things about it. There's other things that made me a little puzzled, but you know. If you're looking for something that's a little more substantive in terms of the nature of the material, Yeah, this one's worth a
I thought I
watch.
had a good message, a really good message for a lot of people. A lot of people need to hear that. You know,
Yes.
they needed to see that. That, you know, when he said, "I never saw you, you're in front of me, but I never saw you, and now I see you." And
Yes.
so many people in relationships are like that. You take them for granted, you just expect them to be there. And he goes, "Wow, if I could do it again, I do it so differently." And we want to think that we would, but we don't know because
Well, and I think
we're
that's an
selfish
important
by
message.
nature.
Yeah, I think that's really important, an important message in this day and age where the sense of connection between people because of social media
Yeah.
and just the whole electronic way of communicating has really led us to become disconnected and detached from one another. So,
How many
how do
times
you
have you
really
been
make
to
a
dinner?
relationship work under circumstances like
How
that?
many times have you people out there been to dinner and you're on your phone and you've got people sitting around you, or you're watching other tables and they're on their phone in their own world, communicating with people who aren't there, who aren't as important as a person sitting in front of you all the time?
Exactly.
Even when you go to a store and you've got merchandise in your hand and you want to buy it, and the phone rings. And that person on the phone is more important to them than the person standing right there with the money in their hand going, "I'd like to buy this, please. I'd like to buy this, please."
Exactly.
It's such a disconnect. Like,
Exactly.
why are the people over there more important?
And I thought some of the allusions to space oddity were interesting too, in the fact that, here he's in space and his wife is home and depressed and she's pregnant on top of it, and it just reminded me of the line from the song about, planet Earth is blue and there's nothing I can do. I mean, in
Yeah.
this case, I mean, the whole planet wasn't blue, it was just her, but she was definitely embodying that sentiment. And here he is, all this distance away, and there's still no connection going on between the two of
Yeah.
them.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I thought that was a very interesting. I don't know if I'm alone on this point, because I haven't really seen anyone else pick up on that particular point and talk about it. But there's a number of different points in this film where you see like lines from that song come to life.
And I found it
And it's
kind of
interesting because
selfish.
the director is best known for being a maker of music videos. I
Okay.
mean, that kind of,
Yeah, that's
that
what
in
it
the back of
is.
my mind,
Yeah.
that, okay, he must be thinking along these lines too.
But I also thought it was selfish of her to want to leave him in the middle of this journey when he's so far away and he can't do anything about anything, you know? And I get why she would want to do it, but I kept thinking, this is not the time. Like her his boss came to see her and like, it's not the time. Like, that's not the time.
Exactly.
When somebody is like could die in any second, you don't know what's going to happen or never make it back home, and that's his last thing. Like, his wife leaves him, you know? It's
Exactly.
just
Well,
weird.
and then she refuses to take his calls. She won't
yeah
talk to him either.
yeah yeah So it
So
was selfish on both ends, but I understand where she's coming from because he didn't give her anything either. But just the timing, is it like there's a right time to do things, and that wasn't the right time to do it.
she probably saw it as a very convenient time to do it though
Yes,
too,
of course. You don't have to answer to
which,
anybody.
makes her just as guilty as him in some ways, in that
Exactly.
regard. So
Yeah. But they smartened up, so good for them.
along the same lines as that film, we have another one
Yeah.
that came out last summer and played in theaters for like probably a week, and then disappeared, but it's available for streaming now. It's a comedy called Shortcomings. And this tells the story of a San Francisco couple that's been having some difficulties. His life hasn't been quite turning out as he hoped for. Hers is beginning to surge, and that's increasingly causing a disconnect between the two of them. And then she learns that she's been offered an opportunity to take an internship in New York, and she wants to take it. And he sort of reluctantly goes along with it and says, well, maybe this is a good time for us to take a break from one another and see what happens. And it's while they're both on their own that they begin to explore different sides of themselves that they hadn't really been aware of or hadn't explored before. And it's interesting because, suddenly, in his case in particular, very much like the spaceman,
Yeah, very much like space.
he's learning that, well, if things haven't turned out the way I wanted to. Who am I supposed to blame for it? I mean, I'm kind of pointing fingers everywhere else. And yet it was actually coming back on him in terms of understanding why his career didn't go the way it did, why his romantic life has been deteriorating, why his attempts at exploring new options have been going the way they did. And he's got a lesbian friend who's like a sounding board for him. And she had been kind of going the same way herself, but then she turned things around and she's there to kind of, you know, point out, well, you can fix this, but you've got to be the one to take responsibility to do this. I find this interesting in the fact that this is all done in the context of a comedy, which, you know, a lot of times you don't see comedies addressing this kind of stuff, especially those of a romantic nature. But this one does, I think, a really good job on it. And I was kind of surprised to see that this film didn't get a wider reception than it did. I mean, it came out, I believe, in August of last year, which, as we all know, is sort of like a cinematic wasteland for a distribution time for most movies. Granted, there were some things on this that I think could have been tidied up a bit, but this is the first, you know, effort from director Randall Park. And, you know, we all have a learning curve when it comes to these sorts of things. But there's a lot of really very insightful ideas that come out of this in terms of relationship, taking responsibility. There's also a lot of stuff having to do with examining the role of Asian ethnic consciousness. Quite a bit of that in terms of,
there was, you know,
is it okay to want to date outside your own ethnicity, things like that.
I mean, okay, there was 2 points. One, the one, you know, overarching theme for me was you don't know what you got until it's gone. And so that was a biggie. You know, he didn't want her until he couldn't have her, and then he goes, well, wait, you know, because he really was interested in, you know, the blonde blue-eyed North American version. He thought that would be kind of fun to try. And you know, when she had a boyfriend, also American looking, he was ticked off that, you know, he's like, he just likes Asian things. So it's like a double standard. He just likes Asian things, but I like, you know, I like the blonde white girl. So that was kind of interesting too. But he, you know, his best friend, she's been in a couple of movies. I recognize her from a few movies. I like her. She's a pretty cool chick.
Well, and I really like the guy who played the lead too. He was he was the quote unquote robot who appeared in the sci-fi movie After Yang. And I was really impressed with his performance there. And then to see him here in a very different kind of role shows to me that he's got quite a range that hasn't been tapped.
And in English too. I get maybe he grew up here. Maybe they all did. I don't know. But yeah.
So I really enjoyed this one. I it's, to me, it's one of those, again, little, you know, little known gems that is definitely worth giving a look. It is available for streaming on a number of platforms. So it's definitely widely available right now. And I would give it 3.5 stars.
Yeah, I'd give it 3.5 too. I think that, you know, and that's what I said at the beginning, they all had something to do with love, but like a different, just a different place on that wheel, you know?
And the sidekick friend, I thought, was hilarious. I mean, some of her one-liners were just
but she plays a similar role in every movie I've seen her in. She was also in, what was that movie with the four girls?
Joyride.
Yeah, Joyride. Yeah. And something else I saw her in, but similar role for her. Maybe she's a comic.
I think she is. Yeah, her name is Sherry Cola. And she reminds me a lot of Margaret Cho.
Oh, yeah.
In terms of the style of comedy.
Yeah. Both of them.
So yeah, give this one a look. It's like I say, it's widely available now. So, you know, go see it.
Yeah, go see it. Okay.
Okay, so before we take our trip to the Oscars, I got one quick little thing I want to throw in here. I'm currently attending the Chicago European Union Film Festival, which is featuring films from Belgium this year. And the one that I've seen that I really liked is this romantic comedy called The Experience of Love. Is the the English
Cosmo.
translation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And basically, it's a story about a couple that's having trouble getting pregnant. And her obstetrician says, well, that's because you're both stuck with past love syndrome. And the way to get past that and free up your psychological block that's preventing the physical side from working is to each sleep with all of your previous exes. And that in itself just opens it up to all kinds of comedic possibilities. It's very cleverly written. I believe it's on its way to getting a US distribution at some point because I did see an American distribution company logo at the beginning. So when it comes out, go see it. It's a lot of fun. Really enjoyed it. And I wanted to let our viewers know too that I'm going to be preparing a blog about my attendance at the film festival with everything that I saw. It'll probably be out sometime next week. So keep an eye out for that if you're looking to see.
You on the red carpet. Very nice. Very nice. You and Trevor.
Oh, and speaking of my blog and my website, I just want to let viewers know also that my site is currently going through some maintenance, so they may periodically have some access troubles, either prevented or slow, but again, that's supposed to be repaired by next week. So
Okay.
I'm still there. I haven't gone anywhere.
All right. Yeah, you want to make sure people can
So now it's off to the Oscars.
hear you.
We got our predictions for the top six categories. Starting with the Best Actor category, which has Bradley Cooper in Maestro, Colman Domingo in Rustin, Paul Giamatti in The Holdovers, Cillian Murphy in Oppenheimer, and Jeffrey Wright in American Fiction. And the winner is.
Are we going to be Cillian Murphy?
Well, we need to scroll down to the next
Oh,
page.
sorry.
The winner, I believe, is going to be Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer. It's just such an outstanding performance. He's been winning just about everything during award season. He's got some competition from Paul Giamatti in The Holdovers, some very faint competition from Jeffrey Wright in American Fiction, but I don't think that either one of them has got quite enough momentum to put them over the top. I know in Giamatti's case that the distribution company has been doing a lot of campaigning and spending a lot of money out from what I heard, but I just don't think it's going to be enough to catch
I
Murphy.
think Giamatti was doing Giamatti. Like,
Yes.
we've done that a few times. Yeah,
Yes.
we've
Yeah,
seen.
I mean, we weren't seeing anything. We really weren't seeing a performance that we haven't seen before.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that is the one thing that's kind of working against him. Whereas with Murphy, you're seeing him in a performance that you've never seen him in before.
Yeah. Oh, I
He,
love
he
Jeffrey Wright. That's what, yeah.
Murphy is showing a range here that he hasn't previously shown in other roles, and I think he really deserves this Oscar.
I agree with that. Okay.
Okay, so next we have Best Actress, and would you like to be, do the honors?
Sure. So you have Annette Bening in Naiad, Lily Gladstone in Killers of the Flower Moon, Sandra Hüller, Anatomy of a Fall, Carey Mulligan in Maestro, and Emma Stone in Poor Things. Who will it be?
Okay, and then when I come up with my winner, I'm doing something here I have never done in any one of my Oscar predictions in all the years I've been doing these. It's too close to call, in my view, at
Right.
this point.
I
And
would
I
go
don't
with
mean
that as well. That's who I was going to say.
I don't mean to make it sound like I'm doing a cop out here, but I mean between Lily Gladstone and Killers of the Flower Moon and Emma Stone and Poor Things, it's a virtual toss-up at this point. Now, if I had to pick a winner, I would pick Emma Stone.
Me too. Me
I
too.
think
I
she's.
like Emma. I like Lily Gladstone. I saw her in another movie the other night, and it still seemed like Lily Gladstone. So I
Yeah.
would say you've never seen Emma Stone like this.
No, I mean just the range of material she had to pull off in this film
Yeah.
really sets her apart, and I think it's the kind of role that I think she really needs to win for to establish her legacy and her career, because even though she's already won an Oscar, and that's the one thing that could be working against her because it
Yeah.
wasn't that long ago,
Yeah.
even though she won an Oscar for La La Land, it was a good performance, but I wouldn't call it a great performance. Not certainly on the same level as her role in Poor Things.
No, but is anybody on that level? If you look at this, I look Annette Bening, Naiad was excellent. She did a great job in Naiad, I have to admit. I loved her in it. But the rest, yeah.
Well, I mean, with Carey Mulligan, for example, I think what hurt her is that she had a lousy script. I mean, she's a terrific actress. She did a great job of making the most out of this, but I think the poor quality of the script is going to work against her. And in the case of Sandra Hüller, I thought, if anything, she should have been nominated for her supporting performance in The Zone of Interest. I thought she was much better there than here. But, what do I know?
I liked Perfect. I liked Perfect. Let's see what happens in the supporting actor role.
Okay, so in the supporting actor category, we have Sterling K. Brown for American Fiction, Robert De Niro for Killers of the Flower Moon, Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer, Ryan Gosling for Barbie, and Mark Ruffalo for Poor Things. And the winner, in my view, will be Robert Downey Jr. for Oppenheimer. He's won virtually everything all throughout awards season. He gives a performance here that reveals acting abilities I never knew he had. He was just outstanding in the part, and this is a very richly rewarding win that he's going to get for this. I don't see anybody else being able to catch him.
I did like De Niro in Flowers of the Moon. I thought he did an
Yes.
outstanding job in that. He was
Yes, I thought Robert De Niro was quite good, and I thought Mark Ruffalo was quite good. Sterling K. Brown, I'm kind of baffled why they even nominated him because, I mean, it's a very capable performance, but award worthy? I'm not really sure.
the gay guy? I don't know.
And as far as Barbie is concerned, I was not a very big fan of that movie. And it just seems weird to nominate Ken and not nominate
Barbie.
Barbie.
I know
Very
people.
odd. So,
Yeah.
okay. So then in supporting actress, I'll let you do the honors.
Hey, Emily Blunt again. Oppenheimer. Danielle Brooks. The Color Purple. America Ferrera. Barbie. Jodie Foster in Naiad and Daveen Joy Randolph in The Holdovers.
And the winner going away is going to be Daveen Joy Randolph.
I would have said America Ferrera.
When I saw The Holdovers, which is a movie again that I was not terribly hot about, I thought she was far and away the best thing about it. I looked at her performance and I said at the time, well, she's definitely going to get awards nominations plenty for this. And then as the season has unfolded, she's walked away with everything so far.
Really? Yeah. Excellent. Good for her.
Yeah, I mean,
Yeah.
I really think that she's the prohibitive favorite. It's a lock. I don't see anybody coming up to challenge her. If there was anybody else in the category who I would have considered giving it to, I mean, I really was very impressed with Jodie Foster. It's the best performance she's given in a very long time.
Yeah, it was really good. I still have to go
And
with America. She gave a performance in that thing that is still playing.
yeah, and
It's
that monologue of hers when she talks about women
Oh,
empowerment—that's a classic.
classic.
And I was also, I was also very impressed with Danielle Brooks in The Color Purple again, which is another movie I didn't really care that much for.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit surprised
Keep
of why
remaking
they
it.
nominated Emily Blunt.
Yeah,
You know,
yeah.
I mean, it was a capable performance, but again,
She's
award
always
worthy.
capable. Yeah, she
I
really is.
thought if you were going to recognize somebody from that film in this category, if anything, it should have gone to Florence Pugh,
Yeah.
who I thought gave the stronger supporting performance, but she's just been completely overlooked all award season. To me, there's also been was a very big, for me, noticeable snub in this category that they did not nominate Claire Foy for All of Us Strangers. I thought that was a tremendous performance, and virtually nobody talked about it all award season long. I suppose in some ways it shouldn't be surprising because the Oscars snubbed that movie completely, which I just went away shaking my head from it. How did that movie not get any nominations? It was one of my favorite films of the year.
Interesting though that Killers of the Flower Moon and you don't see Leonardo anywhere.
No, and the thing is, I mean, I think he could have gotten nominated in that category if they had made some, alterations. I wouldn't have nominated Bradley Cooper, for example. I mean,
In
I
Maestro?
thought
Yeah.
hammy and overacting throughout the film, and
didn't like
you
it. I
know.
didn't like it. I couldn't even watch it all.
Yeah.
But I know people who loved it. They loved it. They
Oh
raved about
yeah.
it to me. Raved
Well, it
about
was beautiful to look at, and I, like I said, I did like Carey Mulligan's performance, but it had so much else going wrong with it. But
Oh.
okay, so now moving on to Best Director, we have Justine Triet for Anatomy of a Fall, Martin Scorsese.